This is Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington with Chris Velasco, and it's great to catch up again.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been too long.
Yeah, for sure. And the last time we talked, it was about your really epic and dramatic soundtrack for Darksiders 3. So it's really going to be interesting to talk with you about the music that you've written for Guilt, which is this really incredibly tense horror game from Tequila Works. And I've really been enjoying the music. It's not the best thing to listen to in the car in the dark, but it's such a perfect fit for the game. And you have written other music for Tequila Works too, including The Invisible Hours that we talked about. And so I'm wondering, you know, now that you know the team so well there, what kind of shortcuts does that give you to get into the composing process for their games? Does it help at all to kind of get up to speed more quickly?
Yeah, I think so. And you know, they also, so this is the third game I've done with Tequila Works. I did Groundhog Day earlier this year too.
Yeah.
And you know, before, they've been so great. Tequila is really one of my absolute favorite developers to work with. Before each project, they've actually flown me out to Madrid, and I get to spend like a week with the team just completely immersing myself in their process and the game and in the art and talking to just different people with different jobs on the game and just really trying to figure like what is it all about, because obviously I can't be there in person working in-house. So I come back to LA and they sort of arm me with everything I could possibly know about the game. So it's a nice transition from not being in-house, but also it feels a bit stronger than just being like a contractor that they hired.
Yeah, for sure. And what's so interesting is their catalog of games, they're all so different from each other. They've also done Deadlight and Rhyme, and then, as you said, Groundhog Day, and now this one. So clearly there is no pattern here. So
no, they've never done a sequel on one of their own games. And it's, you know, they're an independent studio, and they do whatever they feel passionate about is what they're going to do. And it makes it always exciting and fresh to work on something with them, because it's always going to be different. You know, we're not doing the same franchise. Like, well, okay, 2-3 years later, we're doing, you know, DLC or part two or part three or whatever of the same thing, which can really burn people out, especially when they're working in-house.
Yeah, I can imagine. And I know you've done that too, or at least you've worked on games that are sequels and DLCs and stuff. So it must be kind of fun to be able to start with a blank slate for them every single time.
Yeah, totally.
Well, the story of the game is just so atmospheric and really tense and scary. And Raul, the head of the studio, said that the setting, Bethelwood, is a kind of abandoned, or seemingly abandoned, mining town inspired by those industrial towns in Maine and a little bit of Stephen King thrown in there. And Sally's looking for her missing cousin, Emily. And so what was their pitch to you initially?
Well, they did a game a few years ago called Rhyme that mm-hmm. was very successful, and people loved it. And it just had such a kind of heartfelt and heartbreaking story at the end. And so even though this game has nothing to do with Rhyme at all, even visually, it doesn't look similar at all, but they kind of pitched it to me as, they said, imagine Rhyme written by Stephen King. So yeah, the Stephen King and the main thing, and of course the school is called Bachman, which is kind of Stephen King's alter identity.
Oh wow, I didn't know that.
So a lot of definitely a lot of nods to kind of the master of horror.
Yeah, and the atmosphere is, I mean, you really can cut it with a knife, because it a lot of it, at least a lot that I've seen, happens at night, and Sally only has a flashlight, so your field of view is really pretty small, and you don't know what's lurking in the shadows there, and she discovers some really terrifying monsters. And so what was kind of the key for you to kind of unlock what the sound of the score was going to be?
So when I was visiting them, I was asking, I thought, oh, is it going to be a little more fun and quirky kind of horror, like more leaning kind of more on something you might hear with like a Tim Burton movie, like Beetlejuice or something, or are we leaning more into kind of straight horror? And they felt that to kind of really sell that atmosphere and sell this otherworldly place that that Sally is experiencing, they thought I should go more straight ahead horror. I did, you know, I pulled back a bit, so it's not straight up Resident Evil. Actually, Raul calls it like a delicate horror.
Yeah.
And I think that's a pretty apt way to describe it. So it's for sure a scary score, but there are, at the end of the day, you're still playing, you know, a little girl searching for her little cousin. And so there are definitely some moments of a little more lightness to it.
I don't know if you call it the main theme, but Sally's lullaby is a great way to kind of get your feet wet, because there is this really beautiful little melody with a wispy child's voice, but there's a lot of dark stuff kind of going on underneath the surface of that particular cue. And was that one of the first ones that you wrote for the game?
That was the very first thing. Well, it's funny. It was the first and the last thing I wrote. Hmm. So when they had called me up, and this is before I went out to visit them, but I got a Skype call from some guys at Tequila, and they said, oh, we want to talk to you about this game. And I knew that I was already going to be working on Groundhog Day. And so I thought, oh, this is the Groundhog Day conversation, like kind of prepping me for what we're going to do in Madrid. And then they start talking about this game. At the time, a lot of games have their code names, and it was called The Valley. And they're talking about The Valley, and I was just so confused at first. It's like, are we not doing Groundhog Day anymore? Like, what's going on? And like, oh, no. We're doing two games at once this time, and we've got two teams here, and assuming you want to, we'd love to have you on both. And so they sent me a bunch of material, and it looked so cool. And I kind of love that horror mixed with kind of childhood. I don't know. It's very kind of, you know, monsters under the bed, yeah, kind of thing. And so we got off the call, and I knew from just seeing it, it's like, oh, this really needs like a lullaby. And within, like, I don't know, 10-15 minutes, I had written the theme, the Sally's Lullaby, and I just played it out on piano first to kind of sketch it out, and I sent it to them, and they loved it, and that became kind of the main theme. And then I didn't touch it again until I incorporated it throughout the score, but I never sat down and did the actual, like, okay, here's the main theme fully orchestrated, until the very end, right before the recording session. And it was sort of like, oh my God, I forgot to do this. So it was the first and last thing I did.
I love the addition of that wispy little child's voice in, not just in Sally's Lullaby, but it also turns up in a few other cues. And is that an actual child, or is it just a grown-up singer that you know who can sound like that?
No, I knew from day one that I really wanted to have a little girl singing on the score, and there's just nothing else like it. And there are some adults that can really kind of do that pure kind of non-vibrato, like childlike tone, but it's just never going to be exactly the same. And I really felt like we had to have a child singing. So my friend Nomi is a vocal coach, amongst other things. And I kind of put the call out on Facebook, like, does anybody know any little girls that can sing? And she messaged me and told me, oh, I've got the perfect girl. Her name is Lily. She's 10 years old. And I sent her the music for Sally's theme, or Sally's Lullaby. And yeah, a couple days later, she sent me a little recording of Lily singing this. And I was like, oh my God, it's perfect. Like, yeah, it's a whole thing though, working with kids, which I had never done before. Cause you know, you gotta talk to the mom and make sure it's okay and set everything up. And you know, these are not generally studio musicians. So, and she had never done anything like this before. So you've just got to make sure that when you're recording that the pacing is good and you're not tiring them out or frustrating them if you're doing a ton of takes. But man, Lily was such a pro, and I hope she continues to sing, because I think she's got a great voice, and I'm really happy that I got to record her for this one, because I think it's perfect for kind of the voice of Sally.
Yeah, it really gives it this ethereal kind of magical sound. And I'm not far enough into the game to find out what really has happened to Emily, but there's a kind of a wistful quality, and I hope things end up okay. but yeah, that child's voice, Lily's voice, just really adds a lot to it. And Sally herself is such an interesting character. You know, she's been bullied, and she kind of has the initiative to just go out and try to find Emily. And yet she's kind of vulnerable too. And the way that she recharges her health is with an inhaler. So what were some of the, what was her personality, her qualities, her character that you wanted to bring out in the music?
Yeah, she's definitely portrayed as a brave character, because I don't think I would have gone into Bethelwood.
Nope.
So there's that kind of curiosity and also this desire to help her cousin. And like you said, there's bullying is actually a huge theme in this game. That's kind of the moral of the story is about bullying, which is a, you know, a pretty big topic these days. It's always been a big topic, but I think we're finally kind of starting to address it. And that's what Tequila Works wanted to do as well. But, you know, I kind of had the thought about her music, and should it be kind of heroic and brave? And at the end, I decided not to do that, even though you might, that character might sometimes feel that way. Or actually, I guess she's probably pretty confused and scared most of the time, but she's clearly got those characteristics to kind of push forward through throughout the game. But I just felt like I wanted to play up the atmosphere of the school in Bethelwood and this idea of bullying a bit more than trying to lean too heavily into, like, oh, your character is so brave and heroic for doing this. So that doesn't really come in until the end, when you are getting closer to finding Emily. Then I tried to bring a bit more of that out, but I think for the most part, I was playing up definitely like, what is Sally feeling at the moment? And it usually wasn't anything close to bravery. It was like, I'm scared.
Yeah, and rightfully so. I mean, when she gets into that abandoned school after she glimpses Emily through the window and sees the first monster, and the only thing she can do is hide because she's really defenseless. And that is just such a tense moment.
Thank you.
I am in awe that you can create that sort of tension in your music. And I'm sure there are techniques that you use, but if you could just kind of break it down and describe how you do that, how you make that music sound so tense, that would be awesome.
Well, I used definitely a combination of orchestra and electronics. Nothing, you know, synthy, like, nothing kind of sci-fi sounding, but definitely a lot of like very kind of scary sounding synths that blend well with orchestra. And what I've started doing on most of my projects now is, even though there's so many great sounds available to use these days, I mean, the palette has just become enormous. The problem with that is that everybody has access to that. So you don't want to hear something that you did in one of your pieces suddenly pop up somewhere else too, because you're all pulling from from the same basket of sounds.
Yeah.
So I hire somebody now for each project to come in and create a whole new batch of sounds for me. And we kind of go over, okay, this is what the project is. This is what's going on. And here's some ideas I have. And then just kind of spend a couple of weeks just creating these sounds it's hard to describe, but you hear something and you just know, like, okay, that's affecting the kind of fight or flight lizard brain portion in me right now, and this is creeping me out, and so this is good. But that's the great thing about horror, is that you can do anything. It doesn't just have to be kind of aleatoric orchestra, which is extremely unsettling, and there's plenty of that in it, but you can bring in melody and harmony, and when you pair, sometimes that's even scarier. So you pair something like Sally's Lullaby against these this kind of terrifying landscape and these horrific monsters, and it just becomes even creepier. It's definitely the pairing of the environment with the music that really, I think, makes it extra scary.
Oh, yeah. And I think you did this in a few of the cues that I've listened to in the soundtrack, where you do have these really amazing sounds that you've created from your library, and then you pair them with something like really normal, like a music box. And all of a sudden, the effect of having the music box sound with this really creepy stuff going on, it just makes it even more terrifying, I think.
Yeah, there's something about music boxes and horror. I mean, it's a,
yeah.
Everybody does it, but it's just works, and it's so cool, and I love doing it. And that's kind of bringing in that lullaby thing again. And yeah, it's also the kind of monsters under the bed. It's like, oh, you know, the lights are out. Here's a little lullaby. Go to sleep. Try not to think about what's lurking in the closet or under the bed. And yeah, it's cool. I tried to do other things too. Like I took the sound of kids laughing and, you know, like as if they're laughing at you know, your character, Sally or Emily, just part of the bullying thing. And I did experiments with like pitching them down and slowing them down and reversing it and all kinds of stuff so that it, sometimes you more feel it, but that's also in a lot of the cues too, is this kind of theme of just being laughed at.
So subtle, and yet, yeah, it's like really, really powerful. Oh, that is so cool. Even though Sally, you know, she doesn't have a lot to defend herself with. I mean, she can throw soda cans to distract the monsters, and then later in the game, you know, she gets a few more abilities. But there is some combat, and so what was different about writing the combat cues for this game as opposed to, you know, some of the others that you've worked on?
I don't really feel like I took a super different approach to it. It's, you know, there are these really weird creatures and like right from the beginning of the game, and you do have the opportunity to sneak around them. You don't have to engage in combat. But then there are a few moments where it's just inevitable, and there's a couple of boss fights, and like the first one is represents violence. For example, for that one, you know, I wanted it to feel like the orchestra was attacking you, so it's very percussive, very aggressive. You know, other than that, though, it's, I feel like I didn't specifically do anything different on this game that I wouldn't in something else. That for me, that the combat was still, that was straight up like, okay, you're in danger. These things are going to kill you. So yeah, there was no like, let's make this, you know, part of the delicate horror sound. Like, let's just make this full on aggressive.
Yeah, well, it definitely is. And even though I think they intended it to be for, it's rated T for teen, so it's not, you know, full-on horror like Resident Evil. In fact, somebody described it as a child's first Silent Hill. And so So yeah, I can see why, but there are times, I mean, the world of childhood is really scary. I mean, think about the grim fairy tales and all of the terrible things that happened to the kids in those. And so I think it's really cool that you didn't necessarily dial back that part of the soundtrack. And that's really, really scary. So not really a question in there, just admiration, I guess.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah. I read an interesting comment that Raoul made about how he approaches the story and the concepts in his games. And he said, even though they deal with issues and emotions and working through things, he doesn't want to tip his hand and kind of hit the player over the head with what you should be feeling while you're making your way through the game. And does that apply to your music too, or did the music kind of get a pass to sort of reinforce what was going on in the gameplay?
Well, I definitely try to not hit you over the head with what's going on. But, you know, in terms of music that plays while you're actually, that's like non-cinematic or non-fight cues, they're very location specific. And it's one of my favorite locations is the library. And it's very kind of Alice in Wonderland. You enter this room and it's just this like surreal area and like all these huge, enormous books, but like piled up high to the ceiling. And the ceiling is, you know, completely elongated. And, but there's a lot of areas like that. And I just wanted them to feel kind of weird. And you're, you know, this is not, you're not back at home. This is something, that you can't explain, without going too overly scary and make you feel like, oh, this is, there's danger here. I was trying to do more of a, I'm confused and it's, and yeah, just a surreal landscape.
The way that your music works in the environments is really, really fascinating. And there are times when, like, Sally's waiting for the tram to take her back to Bethelwood, and she's all by herself, and it's obviously really, really cold. And I love how your music kind of reflects that chilliness, too. In those instances, it just really kind of reinforces what's on the screen and how anybody would feel, I guess, standing alone on a platform on a super cold
you know,
night.
It's weird, too, how you can manipulate something like an orchestra to give you these feelings of, you know, of cold or warmth or fear or happiness. And I know that's because our brains are accustomed to being told since day one, like, oh, this is the sound of fear, this is the sound of happy. But there are little other orchestration tricks that you can do. Like you mentioned, like it being cold. To me, cold is the sound of like high string harmonics, just this super pure hollow tone. And maybe it's because it kind of mimics like the kind of like the a light like howling of wind, maybe, but I don't know. I do specifically remember thinking like, okay, it's cold here, like let's bring out the violin harmonics.
Yeah, because it definitely sounds frosty, so that totally works. Did you use the same orchestra that you did for The Invisible Hours?
No, I used cinema scoring in Los Angeles for Invisible Hours. I'd used the Kapellen Orchestra in Czech Republic for Guilt.
It just amazes me how these orchestras, you can put something in front of them and they just nail it. I mean, as a former pianist, I was really bad at sight reading. I just have a whole lot of admiration for musicians who can do that. So what were some of the fun things about the recording session?
Recording sessions are always fun. I mean, that's just the final cherry on top of an awesome project. But for me, there's nothing better than hearing your music played by an orchestra for the first time. It's just, it never gets old, even though it's stressful because it does, you know, that's, you know, the whole like relative time thing. Like you could sit here and do nothing for an hour and be completely bored and think, oh my God, that was the longest hour of my life. You get an orchestra in front of you and that hour feels like it's 5 minutes because it's, you know, it's just so expensive to record and
sure.
And you want to get everything and it's the added pressure of, okay, I'm the composer, I booked these players, I convinced the developer to spend all this money to do it, and I said it would be worth it, and so there's a lot riding on it. But man, it's still so much fun. I just absolutely love it. I was unable to be at the session for this one because I was basically writing until maybe the day before we even recorded, and which is often the case on many scores. That's why you've got your team, your orchestrators and copyists, and you finish one thing and you get it approved, and then you send it everything off to the orchestrator, and then that gets printed, you know, halfway around the world, and it's an amazing little machine once it gets up and running. But I did it, all online this time. So I had my audio and video here in my studio, and I could, in real time, you know, make comments. And the only thing that's bad about that is the time difference. So the recording started at like 11 or midnight my time.
Oh, wow.
So it's a lot of coffee, and it's literally pulling an all-nighter and trying to stay focused, you know, when the sun comes up and you're in the studio and they're still recording, you've got hours to go. It's challenging for sure.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, how do you keep your ears from getting tired and really being able to differentiate why one take is better than another?
Well, I mean, that's again why you've got your team. So, I've got my business partner Jose. He lives in Peru, and he was logged in, as well as some of the other people that work for us over there. So, Tanya, for instance, she was amazing. But they stayed up all night with me, and they're two or three hours ahead of me in LA. So it was way later for them too, and just completely brutal. But so I'm talking back and forth with them as well on another Skype channel, and so they're listening. I had my wife Erin in the studio. She stayed up with me all night. She's been my score supervisor on many scores, so she's listening. Plus you've got all the guys in Czech Republic that are recording, and they're listening for everything. And so even if you get tired, and you will get tired, there's still plenty of other ears out there that are hopefully catching things that I may have missed.
Wow, that is so fascinating. And it's just so cool that is a thing that you can do now. And so, wow, it's so interesting to hear stuff like that, because things have changed so much, it sounds like, even in the last, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 years from when you used to have to actually be at the sessions. So, in a way, I mean, it must save some time because you don't have to travel and that kind of thing. So, wow, that is
it does.
Really...
It's great to have that option. I still always prefer to be there if I can. I use the same orchestra for Darksiders, and I actually did travel to Czech Republic for that. And there's no comparison. Like, it is much better to be there in person. But the fact that we can do it remotely is pretty amazing.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And having worked with that orchestra before for Darksiders, you kind of know maybe what their strengths are, so you can kind of write for that and push them a little bit and get the most out of them.
Yeah, exactly. It's great to work with, you know, the same musicians over and over again. I have a few orchestras that I like to rotate between for different projects, and you definitely learn what their strengths are and try to play up to that.
besides the things that you've mentioned, like working with the devs at Tequila Works again, and the characters in the game, and Sally, what were some of the other things that you really enjoyed about the process?
So I say this all the time, that Tequila is one of my favorite developers, and you know, you kind of, I guess everybody says that about everyone that they work with, because you would never go on and it's like, oh man, they were the worst. But it's absolutely true with Tequila, and because they're so passionate about it, and yes, it's a business, but they, you know, Raul also says we create with gusto, and it's true. They just, there's just something special about them. And the great thing about Raul and the whole team over there is that when they hire you, they have no intention of micromanaging at all. You know, they bring you on board because they feel like you are the best fit for their project. And now that we have this history together, they really just kind of let me do my thing, just give me complete creative freedom. And I think I had one revision on the whole score. And that was just because I misunderstood one of the boss fights. I hadn't seen the latest update, so I thought it was a little more intense and action-y. And it wound up being a little more, you've got to sneak around. And so the music I wrote was too intense for it. But yeah, they bring me out, and like I said, and I inundate myself with the project. And so I completely understand what they're going for. I'm able to just really kind of dig down and just be creative and not worry about, you know, getting notes from eight different people. And they've just kind of learned that you let people do what they're best at and give them the space to do it. And, you know, a happy composer is going to put out a better score than a frustrated composer. So they've just been so wonderful in that regard.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, it must be a tough challenge. I mean, clearly not with Tequila Works, but at other times where you're writing a thing and you're kind of looking over your shoulder the whole time, wondering if it's going to get approved or not. So to have that kind of freedom must be just fantastic.
It is. And not that I'm not expecting notes or revisions. Like that's part of the game. You know, you just because I think something is cool doesn't mean that they're going to, and the game may have changed or whatever. So that's all fine. That's absolutely part of it. But just, yeah, not looking over your shoulder the whole time and, you know, like, oh, bar 23, you know, maybe instead of the oboe, maybe a flute, and just little things like that where you're like, oh, well, okay. You get too many notes like that, and then writing music is a job, and instead of a passion. And for me, it started as a passion, and you know, it became my job. But when it can stay, when you wake up in the morning and you're just so excited to go into the studio and write, you know, you're on a good project. And that's every day. That's what it was like on Guilt.
Yeah, and it shows. This soundtrack is just, it's so beautiful, and it's so rich, emotionally rich, from, you know, innocence to terror. So it really, really shows. Is there anything that I missed that you'd like people to know about?
I just really hope that people enjoy it, you know, as always. And there's also, this is something I do not subscribe to, but there's a lot of artists, not just composers, you know, art writers, painters, whatever, you know, that say like, well, you know, art is for art's sake. You know, I do it for myself. And if nobody understands it or likes it, it doesn't matter, because it's something that I created and I put it out into the world and I like it. And it's what I had to say. And that's all great. But I don't really buy into it. I really feel like I want to create something that resonates with me and my client, of course, but also resonates with people that maybe just come across it online or have played the game or perhaps go to a concert that's where, you know, the game music is being featured somewhere. But it brings me a lot of satisfaction when people like what I'm doing. And so I really hope, you know, that people enjoy it.
Yeah, well, you'll know because they'll let you know on social media. So, Chris, well, it's been so much fun to catch up with you, and I really appreciate your time. I've just really been enjoying listening to the music for Guilt. So thank you so much.
Great. Well, thank you for your time also. It's always a pleasure.